अधर्मोऽभिभवत्युत कुलक्षये प्रणश्यन्ति कुलधर्मः सनातनाः धर्मे नष्टे कुलं कृत्स्नन् अधर्मोऽभिभवत्युत। प्लीज चैंट। कुलक्षये प्रणश्यन्ति कुलधर्मः सनातनाः धर्मे नष्टे कुलं कृत्स्नम् अधर्मोऽभिभवत्युत। कुलक्षये प्रणश्यन्ति कुलधर्मः सनातनाः धर्मे नष्टे कुलं कृत्स्नम् अधर्मोऽभिभवत्युत। माताजीस्, कुलक्षये प्रणश्यन्ति कुलधर्मः सनातनाः नष्टे फलं कृत्स्नम् धर्मोऽभिभवत्युत। कुलक्षये प्रणश्यन्ति कुलधर्मः सनातनाः धर्मे नष्टे कुलं कृत्स्नम् विभवत्युत। कुलक्षये, इन डिस्ट्रॉयिंग द फैमिली, प्रणश्यन्ति, बिकम वैनक्विश्ड, कुलधर्माः, द फैमिली ट्रेडिशंस, सनातनाः, इटर्नल, धर्मे, रिलिजन, नष्टे, बीइंग डिस्ट्रॉयड, कुलम, फैमिली, कृत्स्नम, होल, अधर्मः, इररिलिजन, अभिभवति, ट्रांसफॉर्म्स, उत, इट इज सेड। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। Translation. With the destruction of dynasty, the eternal family tradition is vanquished, and thus the rest of the family becomes involved in irreligion. Purport. In the system of the Varnashram institution, there are many principles of religious traditions to help members of the family grow properly and attain spiritual values. The elder members are responsible for such purifying processes in the family, beginning from birth to death. But on the death of the family of the elder members, such family traditions of purification may stop, and the remaining younger family members may develop irreligious habits, and thereby lose their chance for spiritual salvation. Therefore, no purpose should the elder members of the family be slain. Text 40. Adharma abhibhavat Krishna pradushyanti kulastriyah स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण प्रदुष्यन्ति कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण प्रदुष्यन्ति कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण प्रदुष्यन्ति कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः प्लीज चैंट अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण प्रदुष्यन्ति कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण दुष्यन्ति कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय यते वर्णसंकरः मतजिस् अधर्माभिभवात् कृष्ण कुलस्त्रियः स्त्रीषु दुष्टासु वार्ष्णेय जायते वर्णसंकरः अधर्म इरिलिजन अभिभवात् हैविंग बिकम प्रिडोमिनेंट कृष्ण ओ कृष्ण प्रदुष्यन्ति बिकम पोल्यूटेड कुलस्त्रियः Family ladies, Strishu, by the womanhood, Dushtasu, being so polluted, Varshneya, O descendant of Vrishni, Jayate, comes into being, Varnasankaraha, unwanted progeny. Translation and purport also by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, when irreligion is prominent in the family, O Krishna, the women of the family become polluted. And from the degradation of womanhood, O descendant of Vrishni, comes unwanted progeny. Purport, good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. The Varnashram religion's principles were so designed that the good population would prevail in society for the general spiritual progress of state and community. Such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. By being engaged in various religious practices, women will not be misled into adultery. According to Chanakya Pandit, women are generally not very intelligent and therefore not trustworthy. So the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to a good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. On the failure of such Varnashram dharma, naturally the women become free to act and mix with men, and thus adultery is indulged in at the risk of unwanted population. Irresponsible men also provoke adultery in society, and thus unwanted children flood the human race at the risk of war and pestilence. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Tarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratpushe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna So this first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is a prelude to the rest of the text. Here we see the background in which the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Arjuna was completely bewildered and at the last moment refused to fight. And for refusing in such a way, he presented five reasons. Arjuna's logic was fairly powerful, and it took someone like Lord Krishna only to refute his false logic. It was logic that was right in a certain way, but Sri Krishna established a higher logic subsequently. So these five reasons that Arjuna gives are as follows. In text 28 to 30 of this first chapter, he presents his first reason, and that is his compassion. He feels compassion for those who are going to be killed on both sides, especially the elders, the respectable personalities. So he feels that hundreds of thousands of people, millions perhaps, are going to get killed. And he feels very sorry about this. The second reason is from text 31 to text 35, in which Arjuna is expressing his opinion that if the family members are destroyed and then he gains the throne, what good is that throne? Because he will not be able to enjoy the kingdom without his family members. After all, even if one has a lot of opulence, one has a kingdom, wealth and so on, one doesn't like to enjoy it alone. One likes to enjoy things in the company of people one loves, one's near and dear ones. So without those near and dear ones, the kingdom and the wealth and so on had no meaning for Arjuna. So he said, what is the use? I'm fighting for a kingdom. And in so doing, I'm going to kill those very people with whom I would have enjoyed that kingdom. And now that they're all going to be killed, then why fight? For what? So that was the second reason. The third reason he presents in text 36 to 38, where he talks about how sinful such an action will be of killing respectable personalities, those who are like his gurus. There is Bhishma, there is Drona, there are people fit to be there or on the level of grandfathers, not even fathers. So it would be a sin, and Arjuna, being a very cultured person, is afraid of committing sin, and is also afraid of the horrible reactions that would ensue if he were to commit so many sins. The fourth reason he is presenting now, starting with the verse 39 that we are discussing today, 39 and 40, and that goes on till text 43, in which he talks about how this battle will destroy family traditions, and it will have many consequences, which he outlines in these verses, text 39 to 43, and it would have disastrous consequences on society. And the last reason that Arjuna will present, or rather, the last reason for his not wanting to fight, is indecision. He is not able to make up his mind what to do, and that will be the end of this chapter, and it will spill over also into the second chapter. So for today, we are going to start the discussion on the fourth reason given by Arjuna for not fighting, and that is the destruction of family tradition. So even though we are going to discuss only text 39 and 40 today, but the subsequent verses 41, 42 and 43 along with these two form a link, a chain. So I have just summarized these five verses in this chart here, but we'll discuss only the first two verses. But nevertheless, I'll go through the chart. So Arjuna is fearful that because the elder members of the family will get killed in this battle, there will be destruction of family. And when the elders of the family are so destroyed or killed, then destruction of the eternal family tradition will also take place, because it is the elders who generally maintain the family traditions. They are the ones who educate the youngsters. They are the ones who keep them on the track, on the proper track of spiritual, of religious life. Then when the eternal family traditions are destroyed, then the family becomes irreligious. When the men become irreligious, the women also think, well, our men are becoming irreligious, then what is the harm in us becoming irreligious? So the women also become degraded. Then when the women become degraded, naturally, unscrupulous and irresponsible men exploit them, and there is unwanted progeny. When there are too many unwanted children in this world, then a hellish situation is created, and it is hellish for both the destroyers of the family tradition as well as the family members. And because the religious traditions have been destroyed, now the new family members in this generation and the generations to come, they do not offer pinda and tarpan, they don't offer offerings to the ancestors. And therefore the ancestors fall down to hellish life because their descendants have not performed these ceremonies. Furthermore, in this hellish situation, community projects and welfare activities are also destroyed. I think this should be family welfare activities, not humanity welfare activities. So family welfare activities are also destroyed. And also those who have destroyed family tradition themselves then go to hell. So overall, you can see what a disastrous situation is created. This is the scene that Arjuna is picturing in his mind, and he is portraying this scene, this picture, very vividly in these verses, text 39 to 43. It's quite powerful reasoning. So here in text 39, Arjuna begins by saying kula kshaye. Kula means family, kshaya means destruction, because the elders are going to be killed, so the family is destroyed. When the elders are not there, pranashyanti kula dharmah sanatanah. Pranashyanti means again destroyed. Kula dharma, family traditions. And because these family traditions have been coming down from a long time, from a remote time in the past, therefore it's called sanatana. The word sanatan literally means eternal. But in this context, what it really means is that it's coming down from a very remote time in the past. So because these family traditions become destroyed, then the entire family becomes covered in irreligion. Because it is only religious practices that keeps religion alive. If you stop the religious practices, then there is no more religion. Unfortunately, the religious practices have been reduced nowadays generally to rituals. But there's something else that goes along with the ritual, and that is the philosophy, the knowledge, the devotion, the guidance. That has disappeared. So even in those who lead some kind of religious life, only some shell of religion remains in the form of these rituals. But the heart of that ritual, the devotion, the knowledge, etc., that has gone. But in any case, religious rituals are very important. Many times people ask the question, you know, I believe in religion, but I don't believe in religious rituals. You may have heard this argument. Many people say, I just believe in spirituality. I'm a spiritual person, but I don't believe in religion. For me, religious rituals are no good. But you see, religious rituals also are helpful and important to bring about that sense of spirituality, to evoke the real principles of religion in our heart, if we know what those rituals really mean, what they are. So it is very important. Otherwise, everything is a ritual. In every sphere of life, there is a ritual. Right? Even a marriage is a ritual. So now people don't like rituals, so they say dispense with the formalities of the marriages, live together, separate, anytime you like. Isn't it? Because they don't like rituals. But rituals are important. In every aspect of life, there's a ritual. When you start any activity, for example, there's a certain process. Even in a laboratory where scientists are working, they have some rituals they do. They cleanse themselves. Or a doctor in an operation theater, he has a protocol. He follows a certain set of rituals. He has to sanitize his hands, sanitize the equipment, sanitize the whole operation theater. So many things have to be done. So similarly, even for religion, it is necessary to perform rituals. In devotional service, for example, we have so many rituals. But if you don't understand the purpose of the ritual, and if it's not done properly, then it just seems only a ritual. But when you understand it, when you do it with devotion, it's not simply a ritual. It's a very meaningful expression of our devotion. The ritual is a vehicle through which we express our devotion for the Lord. A ritual is an activity that serves a very important purpose to spiritually uplift and to purify people in general. When we perform an arati ceremony, for example, an ignorant person may think, oh, this is just a ritual. But there's a lot behind that simple waving of the incense or the waving of the fan. There's a lot behind it. There's a symbolic meaning to it, and there's a devotional purport to it. So rituals are important when done with a proper understanding. And when these rituals are done like that, then religion is sustained in the family for generations together. But you take out the devotion, you take out the knowledge from the ritual, because of lack of preaching, because of the lack of qualified people to explain dharma or religion to the people at large, then what happens? You're left only with rituals. And the rituals will remain for perhaps one or two more generations, and even that will be dispensed with. And then what do you have? You have a family or a social system that is completely filled with irreligion. So, pranashyanti kula dharmaha sanatanaha, then dharme nashte. So when the dharma is destroyed in this way, kulam kritsnam adharmaha abhibhavati uta, then the entire family is absorbed or is transformed into or is affected by a religion. Uta, it is said. Prabhupada translates it like that. So Uta means that this is how the saintly personalities, the acharyas, have explained it. So Arjuna is saying, this is not my view. The great personalities in history have explained it like this, and I am just repeating it. So when the family becomes involved in irreligion, then that causes terrible situations. The consequences are mentioned in the next verse. But we know that irreligion brings about many, many consequences. And only one of the consequences is being talked about here by Arjuna, that the ladies become degraded. But many, many other consequences come about. And this usually happens when there is lack of preaching and lack of proper practice and the lack of exemplary people who practice and preach. We see that in India especially, and in any place where religion is being followed, many times rituals and traditions get carried down the generations and nobody really knows why certain things are done. There's a humorous story I remember in this connection. At one time there was a marriage in a family, and as the fire sacrifice was going on, the bride and the bridegroom were there, and the priest was there, the family members were there. It was an occasion of joy. And all of a sudden, there was a cat that entered into the whole arena and started disturbing the whole situation. There were many vessels kept there with so many ingredients, and the cat was spilling them over. So the whole function was getting disturbed. So finally, the lady of the house, that is the mother of the bridegroom, she ordered the servants to capture the cat. But if you just let go of the cat, then the cat would come again after some time. So they decided that they would put a huge vessel on top of the cat and keep him trapped there till the whole ceremony was over. So that was done, and when the entire marriage sacrifice was completed, the vessel was lifted and the cat was released. So many years later, the bridegroom and the bride, of course, they had their own children, their children grew up, and it was time for them to get their children married now. And at that time, they remembered, oh, see, when we got married, our mother brought in a cat, and she put a big vessel on top of the cat. So I think we should do that. So the father, the person who was now the father, he ordered the servants to get a cat from somewhere. And then they got a big vessel and they put the cat inside the vessel. And then when the marriage was over, then they released the cat. In this way, many years and many generations passed, and this became Kulodharma. This became the established religious tradition in the family, that whenever any marriage ceremony was performed, you would have to have a cat, and you would have to put a vessel on top of it, and then after the ceremony was over, it would be released. Nobody knew why it was being done. It's only that my father did it like that, my mother did it like that, my grandfather did it like this. We find in India many times there are many, many such family or traditional family practices that are really irreligious, and people continue them in the name of religion. They say, well, it's a family tradition. Many times when people come to ISKCON, there is a lot of protest from some family members, especially for people who come from certain communities where they kill animals, they sacrifice them to please some demigod or some demigoddess or something. And the family members protest, but this is our eternal family tradition. How can you stop it? ISKCON is destroying dharma. You know, in the name of promoting dharma, you are actually destroying dharma. And there is one particular religious institution which propagates that every family must have its kula dharma, its family tradition. Whatever the family deity, whatever the family traditions that exist, must be continued. In one sense, it's all right. But the point is that these family traditions should not be based on some arbitrary, whimsical, fanciful ideas of somebody without knowing the facts of the situation. These family traditions should be based on scripture, as explained by self-controlled sages coming in the proper disciplic succession. That is real family tradition, not just anything that is started by somebody and after a few years it becomes a practice. So this is the important thing. So here Arjuna is saying that because these family traditions have been going on, these Vedic traditions have been going on, they are bona fide. And they have been going on for a long time. And if they do not continue like this, then what will happen to the society? Now these family traditions that are being spoken about by Arjuna are genuine. And they are the principles of the Varnashrama Dharma. As you know, the four Varnas and four Ashramas are very important classifications of society. And in all the Varnas and all the Ashrams, there are specific duties, responsibilities to be performed. When people do so, there will be peace in society, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport. And these are designed to help everybody gradually grow in spiritual life. As in the very beginning of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in the system of the Varnashram institution, there are many principles of religious traditions to help members of the family grow properly and attain spiritual values. So we must check. Some particular family traditions, do they really help us grow in spiritual values? And this must be seen with reference to the teachings of the great acharyas. Then we can check whether some tradition is a valid tradition that we should follow or not. The Varnashram Dharma is very, very important at this stage. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice exposition on the present situation of the Varnashram Dharma in Kali Yuga, how it can be rectified by Krishna consciousness, and ultimately what should be the attitude of people in this age, in this connection. Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the second chapter of Nectar of Devotion, he says that the four Varnas, he quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto, and says that these four Varnas actually come from the universal form. The Brahmanas come from the head, the Kshatriyas from the arm, the Vaishyas from the belly, the Shudras from the legs of the universal form. And for each of these Varnas and Ashramas also, there are prescribed duties which must be done. So whatever Ashram or Varna we belong to, we must practice these principles, and all the four Varnas must cooperate with each other, and such a cooperation will create a very peaceful, happy and prosperous situation on earth. However, if the individual members of the different Varnas do not follow the prescribed practices, then what will happen? They will fall down from their position. The nine Yogendras explain this to Maharaj Nimi, and Srila Prabhupada quotes this point. So Prabhupada says the situation in Kali Yuga is that everyone is simply puffed up, thinking, I am a Brahmana, I am a Kshatriya, only for name's sake, but he doesn't follow the real principles that a Kshatriya or a Brahmana is supposed to follow. So therefore, nobody is really a Brahmana, nobody is really a Kshatriya in Kali Yuga. Prabhupada says everyone is lower than a Shudra, because nobody follows any principles of the Varnashrama Dharma. In the scriptures, there is a verse, Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Parah Puman Vishnur Aradhyate Pantha Nanyat Tattosha Karanam. This verse is quoted often in Prabhupada's teachings. And the meaning of this verse is that by following the prescribed duties that are given in the Shastra for those in different varnas and ashramas, Lord Vishnu is worshipped. And if one does that, then automatically one attains the perfection of life. And there is no other way apart from this. Of course, there are higher principles in the teaching of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. This beautiful discourse takes place, where Mahaprabhu takes Ramananda Rai higher and higher and higher, till he brings Ramananda to the point of pure Krishna consciousness, where we simply hear and chant about Krishna. So in any case, in the modern age, Srila Prabhupada says, everybody is lower than a Shudra because nobody really follows any principles of these genuine family traditions. But Prabhupada has a solution. He says, never mind, because it's practically impossible to reinstitute the Varnashrama system as it was in the earlier ages, now in Kali Yuga. To some extent we may succeed, but it's extremely difficult. Very, very difficult, because people are so extraordinarily degraded. Therefore, Prabhupada gives a simple solution. Let nobody think of himself as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. Let everyone become a devotee of Krishna. And by being such a devotee of Krishna, then it doesn't matter what you are. Then everybody cooperates to serve Krishna, regardless of what your so-called varna or your ashram is. He says, then this material world or this earth planet will become Vaikuntha. So that is Prabhupada's simple explanation of how the Varnashrama Dharma and the Bhagavad Dharma can be reconciled and interconnected to produce the highest perfection of life, and at a social level to produce peace, prosperity, and so on. Now, why is this family structure important? Because the family is the basic social unit, and if the family is destroyed, the society will be destroyed. We see that in the past, in India, and all over the world when Vedic culture used to be prevalent, that we had a joint family system. Many of you have heard, even if you come from the West, I'm sure you may be aware, that there used to be a joint family system in India, where many members of the family, many generations would stay together. And you would have many brothers, and then their children, and then their children, all staying together. And they would stay very harmoniously together. Because the elders were present there, the elders would be like a controlling influence, because they were upright, they were religious, they commanded authority. They didn't have to demand it, they commanded it by their own religious life and their character. They looked after their younger ones, they guided them in the principles of religion. And all the younger members of the family obeyed these elders. So there was a unity in the family, there was harmony, and even when there were differences or quarrels, they were easily settled by the elders. And that is why this culture prevailed for centuries and centuries. Today, everything is broken down. Today, as Kali Yuga has progressed, and the symptoms of Kali Yuga have manifested in such an intense way, we find that even two people find it difficult to stay together. Isn't it a fact? Therefore, even marriages hardly exist now. Because two people, the level of tolerance and understanding, cooperation has become so low, they just can't tolerate and adjust with each other. So what to speak of a joint family then? Imagine, it'll be like a big war. Isn't it a fratricidal war, like another Kurukshetra or something like that? So what has happened is, because of the effects of Kali Yuga, now we have the nuclear family rather than the joint family. So in the nuclear family, you have the young man and the young lady together living as husband and wife, at least hopefully. Nowadays in the West, not even that. It's catching up in India also. And then they have their children, and now the same culture is coming in. The elders are no longer there to guide them. And anyway, the daughter-in-law can't get along with the mother-in-law, so they want to stay separately. And then there are so many such problems, so there's no one to guide them. So they lead their lives whimsically. They take to irreligious life, because now the elders are not there to keep a check on them, to guide them. And therefore, because they are in irreligion, they're living a life of irreligion, they cannot guide their children now. And when their children start growing up a little, they get concerned. And then they come to ISKCON. What can we do about our children? Well, you must lead a religious life yourself first. Then you can guide your children properly. So this is the situation now, where everything is crumbled because the joint family system and the elders presiding over the joint family system has been destroyed. But still there are remnants, residual traces. I was told that there is this one family in Srirangam, famous temple town in South India, the place of Lord Ranganath, where there is a family of priests, of brahmanas, who serve the Lord in many ways, in different capacities. And they live in one house, and there's something like, I don't know, 50 or 70 members. Huge number, compared to the modern joint family even. 50 to 75 people of one family, so many generations, staying together in one house. And the wonder is, they don't have a kitchen in the house. They only get the Mahaprasad of Lord Ranganath, and they're happy with that. They just distribute that to all the family members and they stay there. Right? Extraordinary, isn't it? So, but these are rare, and it's not going to last for long. Because as the generations go on, then those who are priests and brahmanas are thinking, oh, my son should get educated. One of our sannyasis in ISKCON was commenting that he had gone to one of the famous temples in India, in South India actually, I won't mention the temple. And he was introduced to the chief priest of that temple. It's a very big temple. And the chief priest saw that he was a Westerner. And he said, you know, I have four sons. Three are not very intelligent, so they're going to remain here. But this one is intelligent. Can you take him to America? Just see. Who should serve Krishna? The one who's not intelligent. They should be here, because anyway, serving Krishna or serving the Lord, what is it? It doesn't require any intelligence, and anyway, he's not good for anything else, so he can serve here. But the one who's bright, yeah, he should go to America, make a lot of money, be a big man, send back a lot of green notes, and make us all happy. So if the chief priests of certain temples can think like that, then we can imagine what is the condition of the society. So it is important that the family tradition be protected. In ISKCON also, we have a lot of work to do on that. We have to strive to see that if ISKCON can't set a model for the future, no one can. Because all the other traditions are gradually declining. ISKCON, by Srila Prabhupada's genius, has a formula or has a foundation for perpetuity. It is going to last for the next 10,000 years. Despite the many, many problems that may be there, but it's going to grow. So it is our responsibility, and especially those in the Grihastha Ashram, must ensure that family traditions, the family culture is preserved. It shouldn't be taken lightly. The same values that the Vedic culture talks about must be reintroduced within the families. Similarly, the other ashrams also, the brahmacharis, the vanaprastha, sannyasis, must also strictly follow the respective prescribed duties and rules and regulations. So let's see the next verse, because Arjuna says that once the family traditions are destroyed, then the family becomes irreligious. Then what happens next? Adharma bhibhavat Krishna pradushyanti kulastriyaha. Then the ladies, the women of the family become degraded, they become polluted. Pradushyanti literally means polluted. They become degraded. So the men, when they become irreligious, how can they expect the ladies to be religious? We find this also very commonly happening in India. One time I was speaking to one gentleman, and we happened to get talking because I met him somewhere in the train or something like that. And I asked him, please come to the temple, you know, you stay in such and such city, there is an ISKCON temple there, so please come and join. He said, yeah, my wife does religious activities. I said, that's fine, what about you? You just expect your wife to do religious activities and you'll do whatever you like? Well, my wife goes, that's... So the common conception is religion is a department for the wife to handle, and I'll handle, you know, the other aspects of life. So a lot of education is required. So gradually, if this attitude continues, if the men are going to become irreligious and only expect that the wives will become religious, it's not going to last for long. Soon the women will also become irreligious. When the women become irreligious, the men are already irreligious. So then what will happen? There will be adultery, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. Because men and women will mix freely. And when there is free mixing, as we find in the modern culture, everywhere outside, then there will be adultery. From adultery, naturally, there will be unwanted progeny. Strishu dushtasu varshneya, O descendant of Vrishni, once the womanhood gets polluted, then jayate varnasankaraha. Jayate means born. Varnasankaraha. Varna means the four varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Sankaraha means mixed. In other words, the purity of the varnas doesn't remain. Anybody produces children from anybody else. You see, in the Vedic concept, there is a... in the Vedic culture, there is a concept of pratikul and anulom and pratilom vivaha. You know, a pratilom vivaha is when the man and his wife both are either of the same varna, or the man is of a higher varna than the wife. That's called a pratilom vivaha. So that is okay according to Vedic culture. And as opposed to that, there is pratiloma vivaha, as opposed to the anulom vivaha, where it is the opposite, where the wife is from a higher varna than the husband. So in any case, since today these varnas have no meaning, really speaking, so the Krishna consciousness is the important element. But Arjuna is talking at a point in time, 5,000 years ago, when these varnas and ashramas did exist. People did follow the rules and regulations and the prescribed duties of each varna and ashram. So Arjuna's statement is important for that time when he was talking. So because of this mixing of varnas, therefore you have unwanted progeny, you have children who are unqualified. And Prabhupada, at one place somewhere, in some lecture, he talks about how the modern progeny is simply like the old Rakshasas. You know, they're born in this, the modern equivalent of the old Rakshasas. You have so many little Asuras being born every day in huge numbers all over the world. All unwanted progeny. There is no conception of any purity or anything like that. So therefore, these unwanted children, and the lack of a family structure, the lack of family traditions, the lack of elders who can bless the youngsters and who can preserve these religious values is no longer there. So what happens? It's like a slaughterhouse now. Srila Prabhupada talked about the educational system being a slaughterhouse. But if you look at the rest of the society, the whole social system is like a slaughterhouse now. The modern family is a slaughterhouse, spiritually speaking. The schools and colleges are slaughterhouses, spiritually speaking. The streets and everything else, they're also slaughterhouses. So this is the kind of values with which the children are being brought up. So because of this chain of events, the population becomes also degraded. So it's absolutely important that if the society has to become stable and happy, there must be a good population. And Srila Prabhupada makes a very important point in this purport that good population depends on the chastity of the women. Very important. Just see how important women are for the society. Where is that line? Yeah, such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. So the women in society have a very, very important role to play because the entire future of the society depends on them. In the Shastras it is said that a woman gains power and strength by her chastity and a man gains power by his brahmacharya or celibacy. That is a Vedic conception actually. And we see so many instances of chaste women becoming so powerful. Time doesn't permit us to get into various examples, but we can talk about Gandhari, who was so chaste that when she cursed Krishna, Krishna accepted it. Although Krishna is the Lord, what curse can affect Krishna? But Krishna appreciated this lady is very chaste. And by the laws that I have made, the dharma that I have made, this chastity has given her this power, so I must also accept it. Similarly, there are so many other stories of Nala and Damayanti, for example. Nala used to be a king, but he came on hard days. He lost everything. But Damayanti, his good wife, accompanied him and didn't abandon him. In fact, Nala became so poor that he had only one cloth. And he had to tear it in half and share it with his wife, half the cloth with the wife and half the cloth for himself. But still, Damayanti didn't abandon him. But nowadays, Srila Prabhupada explains that for the slightest inconvenience, or if there is some economic difficulty or any other kind of difficulty, the husband and wife just leave each other and go away. Srila Prabhupada mentions a story that he saw in 1935, he says, in one lecture, he says like that, where he was walking in a street and he saw that there was a beggar. This beggar was completely deformed. His body had a lot of diseases, he was defaced. But still, he was sitting there on the street, he had no home, but he was combed, his hair was neatly combed, he couldn't do it himself. So somebody had done it for him. His clothes were there on him. Not good clothes, but they were there. He was looking fresh, sitting nicely in a neat place on the street. And his wife was sitting next to him. He was also looking clean and neat. And Prabhupada says, just see, she didn't abandon him. Even though he was sick, he was practically a leper or something like that. He had no money. But still she was looking after him. So Prabhupada explains this as an example of chastity. So this brings tremendous power to women, power for good. And with this power, just imagine the kind of positive change, the positive energy that can be generated in the society. And then when the children are imbued with this positive culture, the Vedic culture, a good population will emerge. And then we can actually have Vaikuntha on the earth. And what happens after that, after the Varna Sankara, that we will hear tomorrow onwards in the verses to come. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Mahaprabhu ji. Can you please switch on the mic?
Just a few comments about the situation in England.
Yes, please.
It has got so bad that almost 50% of marriages end in divorce, and the family unit is usually two groups of parents have come together, and children would say, oh, that's not my daddy, that's my daddy, he lives over there. And so the authority of the father, more than the mother, has been eroded almost completely. So men have very little influence. The women have more influence. So they're not quite degraded yet. In terms of authority from the top, we have a royal family. And although the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh have been together for many years, three of the four children have divorced. And so the example set by the leaders in our society is going. Again, erosion. Your point about families in India where the lady does the puja and the man doesn't do anything. I have stayed in a number of houses over the last 5 years, and that has always been the case. The man just doesn't seem to do anything in India. So it's the man is losing the power. The women still have a great deal of strength. But there is one positive point, and that is throughout England, in practically every single town, we have what are called interfaith groups.
Mm-hmm.
And at these groups, each of the religions come together and set forth their understanding of a particular point that's being discussed. And the faith groups get stronger because each religion is able to see the strong points in its religion and continue them. So there is some hope.
Thank you very much for these illuminating comments, Mahaprabhuji. Any other question or comment? Yes, at the back, please. Can you pass the mic?
I have a question about the practical program for ISKCON, mm-hmm. for the women. The general, I would say, complaint about, especially the young girls in India, is that there's no solid program for the training. And because they see there's so many youth program, brahmacharis getting trained, they can live in the temple. But as far as I know, can the women stay even 1 week in the temple and get some solid training? And can something more than 1 week, when they can have something better? Maybe you'd like to tell us if there's any such program going on in India, or if there's any plan to have any solid program for them. Because right now, the girls are working 10, 12 hours a day, and they're dead tired even to come 1 day to the temple. And it's like literally a race against, you know, it's a competition how to even get them with us.
Yes, well, it's not an easy question to answer, because when the whole social values around you have crumbled, the family structure has eroded completely, it's not an easy solution. You see, as far as women in the Vedic culture, they were protected by the family system. So they learned the culture, they were educated appropriately within this family structure. Kunti Maharani, for example. There is no information that she was formally educated in the way that the men were. But she was much more than any of our modern PhD scholars. And even she was more exalted than, you know, everybody around. The kind of realizations that she has spoken about, her kind of understanding of spiritual truths, her understanding of Krishna consciousness, her advancement in that is extraordinary. So The family unit, the family structure, the social structure was such that the women were protected, they were engaged properly, educated, cultured, everything was done within. Now the fact is we don't have that social structure, that setup, the family structure is crumbling. So it's not an easy question to answer of how we can replicate that within the ISKCON society. It's a challenging question because there are going to be so many different approaches and attitudes and opinions and everything and practical difficulties at each level. But we have to keep in mind the need of the ladies on one hand to be trained and to become Krishna conscious. It's a very real need. And in the second, on the other hand, some kind of cultural sensitivity has also to be there. So I can't answer that question in an easy way like that. As far as whether in India such facilities exist, well, I guess in most temples there are some programs always that go on for ladies, for young ladies, say college students or like that. In most of the city temples that I have visited, there are always some programs like this going on. And some of the ladies are preaching to those ladies, the younger ladies who come. And that's going on. But in India, I haven't seen any place where there is a Brahmacharini ashram. I could be wrong, but as far as I know, there isn't a Brahmacharini ashram. Maybe in one or two temples, I don't know. But in a regular way, like you have Brahmachari ashrams, I haven't seen. So I can't give you a complete answer. It's something that has to evolve, and all the devotees, the thinkers of the society get together of ISKCON society and we work out all these things. We have a long way to go. But at least we can do whatever is within our power. We have to try to keep the family unit stable, we have to try to keep this culture stable. We have to see that this free mixing is also restricted. So as far as we can, whatever little we can do, we have to try to do. And gradually Krishna will facilitate some system to emerge for the modern time, in our context. Okay? But yes, there is a need, and this need has to be addressed satisfactorily.
I can assure you that in Prabhupada's time there were Brahmacharini ashrams.
Yeah, in the West.
I spent 5 years in one, even in India. Mm-hmm. So sometime along the lines, somebody got together and decided that it was more trouble than it was worth. And in most cases, they have been eliminated. Now we see before us wonderful collection of ISKCON Youth Forum. But actually, there could be just the same kind of preaching if some women preachers were encouraged to do the same thing with the women. They have to be encouraged. There are a lot of women who live in hostels because they're educated, you know, they're being educated in colleges or universities or medical schools. They're out there. Not just the men. And the women preachers have to be encouraged. That's the basic thing.
Yes, that is true. We have to have more women preaching to the women. In the absence of such a stable family unit in the social structure, yes, that must be encouraged. Hare Krishna.
Hi, Bhava Prabhu. I just want to know why some of the brahmacharis also want to go to America.
Oh.
I know at least two of them who are just waiting for the papers.
Only two? Because that is Goloka. All the good things in life are available there. No, yes. Right. Better. Yes. Yeah. Of course, I was speaking with tongue firmly in cheek. So, yes, somebody.
Prabhuji, you said that after destruction of eternal family traditions, there would be many abnormalities in societies. One of them was what you said. What are the other abnormalities in society?
Well, for one thing, when people become irreligious, they lose their human values, they lose spiritual values, they begin to quarrel with each other more, they become more selfish, they become more greedy, more lusty, more materialistic, they cannot tolerate each other, people just fight with each other, kill each other, there are wars, there is terrorism, there is crime. So all the ills of the society that we see stem from this one basic fact: lack of a proper Krishna conscious atmosphere in the society, lack of the proper religious principles being upheld in the society. Okay, so thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.